you know, I understand a place going on strike. And at that point, I feel like all the workers who are in that union walk out and start picket lines. And then I read stories the last couple of days about how it's spreading to this place and to that place. What's going on here? Do they not strike all at once across the board?
So there's a, we can think of how a union strikes as a chess game, and we can think how of how employers respond as part of the chess game. So the union here had an expired contract. At that point, they're free to strike. They chose not to strike everywhere. The given reason, which makes sense to me, is they want to put pressure on key production facilities but allow their members to continue to work, and they don't want to draw down what's called a strike fund. So that is a reserve. The UAW has built this up reportedly to $850 million, and it's kind of like a war chest, if you will, to make sure that workers have income to tide them over for what they hope will not be, but it could be a long strike. So that's why the way the UAW is playing this chess game is they're strategically picking out particular production plants and distribution centers.
And then that leads to another dumb question. I assume that as long as you're showing up to work, even if your union's on strike, you're still getting paid, hence not drawing from the fund is what you're, the point you were making, right?
Yeah, and that's not a dumb question. That kind of finishes off the point very clearly. It's to not draw down that fund. So the idea is to put maximum pressure within a certain context here, while reserving for the distinct possibility that the first move on the chessboard isn't going to be successful from the union's perspective, so hold some resources back for a later move.
And part of the chessboard I saw as well is that they are almost not doing as much of striking facilities to Ford because they say that Ford is in serious negotiations. So the union can actually play these companies off each other strategically?
They can. And I just have to say, it goes the other way, too. We're not going to talk about it for this particular strike, but there are instances where employers, you know, for example, when we've got the Writers Guild and we've got the actors out, and the employers have combined, and so they can selectively target particular studios or so forth where they might want to negotiate. They're not doing that. I'm saying it just works both ways. Okay. But in any event, the idea here is to put the pressure on one point here. And John, in the past, the UAW has historically identified a target. So they usually target the most profitable company. Sometimes they target the most cooperative company, but they're trying to set a standard, and it's called a pattern. So hypothetically, if these talks with Ford progress and reach a tentative agreement standpoint, what the UAW would do by historical standards is say to Stellantis and to GM, all right, this is the contract that you have to agree to in whole or in part, or we'll continue to strike.
Okay. We'll have to obviously monitor this as it goes. We don't know how this is going to play out, but Republican presidential candidate Tim Scott of South Carolina essentially said, if you strike, you get fired. That was his reaction to the UAW. The UAW now filing a complaint to the NLRB saying that he's trying to pressure the union. Can the company just strike? He attributed Ronald Reagan's move of firing the FAA or the air traffic controllers, but I believe that those were federal employees, so like I guess it would be under Reagan's purview. Can these three companies come together and fire all their workers? Would that be allowed?
They cannot. I mean, that is crystal clear they cannot. Workers have a right to strike. The 1935 National Labor Relations Act has given them that right. The only time an employer can fire a striker is for what is called misconduct. Typically, misconduct cases involve violence, threats of violence, intimidation of people. None of that is present right now. And I would just say, because I have studied hundreds of these, employers sometimes do fire strikers, and they risk then losing the right to hire permanent replacements. Now, for a long time, unions had considered the doctrine of hiring permanent replacements tantamount to firing people, because then the strikers put on a reinstatement list only when the person who's crossed the picket line or the new hire leaves the job. Is the employer obligated then to reinstate that employee? But again, emphatically, I just have to say, as a point of clarity, there is no right that an employer has to fire a striker. Under federal law, there is no right to strike. So that is why President Reagan, back in the early 1980s, he didn't have to fire the PATCO strikers, the air traffic controllers. That was his decision. But completely different law.
So private company employees are protected by the National Labor Relations Board Act of 1935. Federal workers are not.
Correct.
That's right. 423, just rewinding back for just a second, that you mentioned the strike fund asks, does the union pay the striking workers? So yeah, if the workers are part of the strategic plants that are shut down or they're striking, that's where that fund goes. They just pay their wages, essentially?
Right. So they do. So in some of the states where a strike is occurring, states allow for unemployment, for strikers to collect unemployment. Other states expressly don't. Regardless, what the UAW is saying is, we're setting aside money here. This is very common. And reportedly, it's $500 a week in assistance per striking member. And let's understand that a corollary of that is, if you're not showing up for picket duty, or if you're crossing the picket line, there's no indication that's happening. But I'm just saying that can cut two ways. In other words, the union can cut off that fund if they think there's a problem with an individual adhering to the rules.
Okay. I kind of have a complex question. So without going into the whole thing, I'm going to kind of summarize the UAW's relationship with these automakers. For a long time, these union workers for decades fought and won essentially a middle-class lifestyle. They were buttressing up and holding up these three American companies. They made a ton of cars, and the union did pretty well. They had battles, they had fights, they had strikes along the way. And then the table started to turn in the aughts, where these manufacturers started to get into trouble. There was competition from other manufacturers in other countries, and to the point that nearly all three of them, two of them, went bankrupt. And the union, in order to not completely bankrupt all the companies and lose all the jobs, gave up a lot. This is an effort to get a lot of that back now that those companies are doing well. Have I summarized that fairly okay in 30 seconds before I get to my next question, Professor?
I thought that was brilliant. Seriously, that's fundamentally what this is about for the union, is regaining the huge concessions they made to keep these automakers afloat. So they want a restoration of a defined benefit pension plan. They want to do away with the B tier, the sub. It's kind of like putting a junior varsity group of employees and a varsity group together. They're doing the same work, but they're being paid at very different rates. So yes, you've got it just right.
That leads me to my next question. I think that a lot of people would say, okay, well, yeah, the CEOs are getting big raises. The companies are doing well again. It's time to give the union what they deserve. Is that an oversimplification? And I guess what I'm asking, Professor Leroy, not that you do economics, but just understanding how these things work, is it possible that a union deal that is really strong for the union, maybe there are some legitimate concerns about the changing economies of car manufacturing, competition from others, that it may be not as simple as, well, pay them what they've earned over the last couple of years because the good times are here again?
So in theory, that's what the union wants, and they can shoot for it, and that's what they're saying. In reality, already, even with these concessions, the unionized car makers are not cost competitive relative to a Toyota, a Honda, a Tesla. So that's a real problem. I mean, if the automakers sort of give in here, the long-running concern, it's not that they couldn't afford it tomorrow or make payroll, but the long-running concern, as was put forward in an editorial by the GM president in the Detroit Free Press late last week, was, we won't have money to continue to invest primarily in EVs, electric vehicles. And so we'll be cost uncompetitive and we'll be technologically uncompetitive. And the talk back from the companies is, and I think it's valid, is if you make us uncompetitive and hem us into a gasoline engine model of production, we'll be both union and gasoline production, and we will not be viable over the long haul.
So that even though things are good right now, a union deal which goes too heavily towards the workers, they would say, and you know, it's probably the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, but they say that that would hamstring them from converting to electric, which, of course, is the talk that everyone has as we move forward here over the next couple decades.
That's correct. And I would just say a side issue, which really could be a front issue, is the UAW wants to have the right to represent employees at 20 electric vehicle plants at which these three companies have joint venture partnerships.
Mm.
And so, you know, that could be sometimes a settlement is kind of hidden in the background. So hypothetically, what would happen if they just split their economic differences right down the middle and the three companies said, we will allow you to represent 20 new plants, and you as a union can put your foot into the future of car manufacturing, which is going to be EV one way or another. Could that be a way to settle this? I think it's a possibility. Now, I have no direct knowledge of that.
President Biden's announcing that he's going to join the picket lines on Tuesday. Is that a big deal?
It's a really big deal. I mean, you know, I've been studying this for all of my career. I've never seen something quite like it. And I would say in the same breath, former President Trump is going to be speaking in Detroit next week to auto workers. Now, it's not clear to me if they're just union. It's not a union-approved or sanctioned event. But, you know, for a long time, if we go back to the early 1980s, when we had what was called a realignment election, and it brought in Ronald Reagan as president, a lot of union members abandoned the Democratic Party, and they've been really hard to get back. And so if you just look at presidential politics, the United Auto Workers itself has not taken a stand in favor of either one. I think Biden's being there basically seals an endorsement for Biden. But I also wonder, John, symbolically, what would that look like? And I realize we live in a very polarized world. My sort of rhetorical question is, what will it look like to union workers in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, these pivotal states? What would that look like? And if it could get, I'm making up a number, an additional 5% of the union household vote to swing Democratic, that could be a big deal.
Right. Yes, the politics of it, of course, I think line up for both of these candidates who want to appeal to this big group of bakers. I guess what I'm also asking is there a little bit of short-sightedness of the president of the United States so clearly picking one side in a strike?
Absolutely. And, you know, I read a tweet or a message he put out, and the first part of it was, I'm all in for the workers. The second part of the message was, I hope that the companies will be competitive going into the future. We need them. So, you know, it speaks to your question. You got to be careful not to be too partisan. Having said that, you know, over the past 8 years or so, among the many sort of factors that enter into presidential politics and just national politics, The American worker, whether union or non-worker, the American worker has so many grievances about how industry has left towns hollowed out, how wages have not kept up with inflation, how benefits have been cut, how a son and a daughter don't make what their mother and father and grandmother and grandfather, their grandfather made. And so that's just, you know, the background is really the foreground because that is really driving a lot of what these political postures are all about.
Professor Leroy, we got to get going here, but I got a great comment on the text line I want to share with you and give you a minute to respond. Do we think that the minimum wage issue, $15 an hour, is possibly a direct cause or a reason that the UAW is feeling the need for a large pay raise? And that's a reason some people sometimes are against raising the minimum wage too quickly, is that it gives other workers who are seemingly more skilled than minimum wage the point of, well, now us too. Do you think that these laws interact with the way unions ultimately feel?
I do. So it's kind of a catch-22. The texter has a great point. When you raise the minimum wage, to that point, there are temporary employees who work for the big three, and they make just barely above minimum wage in states such as Illinois and Pennsylvania. In some sense, you know, the union has to sit there and say, well, why are we even talking about a small wage increase that just puts our membership slightly above the minimum wage? On the other hand, for the non-union sector, the increase really acts as a substitute union. When the union goes out and raises the minimum wage through legislation, they're really working against themselves because they narrow the difference between union and non-union pay.
Nothing happens in a vacuum, I guess, is the ultimate sum up of that. Professor Leroy, we're out of time. Thanks for this wide-ranging conversation, and we'll have you on again soon, either about this strike or another one, okay?
Thank you, John. Have a great weekend.